Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. It once again, I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show on the Blog Talk Radio Network, sponsored by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Bill Murray. I founded this organization. I'm coming to you from Los Angeles tonight, and I am myself an adult survivor of child abuse. Joining me on the air this evening will be a panel of other adult survivors of child abuse, and we hope that you'll join us as well, because tonight is what we call an open topic or an open mic show. And that means that we don't have a specific topic that we're going to talk about right from the beginning of the show. We're not sure where the show is going to go. And you can help us design the discussion for tonight's show. That's the idea on an open topic night. We want to engage the community. It's very important for us to understand what the community has on their mind and what kind of issues they'd like to address. So you can call in for a variety of reasons. You can join a current conversation. You can bring up a topic you'd like to hear discussed. You can ask us questions about our work, our website, or any of the issues of child abuse, or perhaps you'd like to share something about yourself, all of which are possible ways to engage with us on an open topic night. Now, it's very simple to do this. All you do is call in on the direct phone number that we provide, 646-595-2118, and then push an additional number 1, which we'll get an instruction to do. And that tells me, the host, that you want to join our conversation. Again, 646-595-2118 is the direct number, and then push number 1 when you want to come on the air with us. We're willing to discuss just about anything tonight, and we promise that we'll be kind to you. I'll hold Lillian and Carol back. They start to get angry. No, they won't. These are our two panelists for tonight, one of who is the co-host for the evening, Carol Levine. I'm making jokes about her. Ms. Carol Levine is a very knowledgeable 30-something year in recovery person from Northwest New Jersey. They're both authors. Carol's book is called Panic Child, the harrowing true story of sexual abuse and neglect, which she wrote some years ago, and describes not only the terrible way she grew up, but also, of course, how it affected her in her adult relationships and choices she made in adulthood, and most importantly, how over 30 years ago, Carol, through a prayer group in her case, started down what she calls her journey of recovery and healing. She has an awful lot to offer us. She's very active in the local community there in Northwest New Jersey and Northeast Pennsylvania as well, speaking regularly and making appearances. And she's our regular Monday to Friday co-host. So let me welcome to the air Carol Levine. Carol D. Levine. Hi, Carol. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine, Bill. How are you?
I can't complain. I just had the horrible thought that maybe I made that whole introduction with my microphone on mute.
No, actually, you did a good job. I heard the whole thing. Yeah. And you didn't make any mistakes.
Just as I introduced you, I went, oh, and I looked over at the phone, and it was,
well, I would have let you know. I would have let you know.
Yes, I've done, you know, I've done it before, so.
Yes, I do.
I'm still coughing on occasion, so please, I apologize ahead of time if that happens, but I am feeling you know, I'm 90% better and maybe mm-hmm. even more than that. So I'm delighted to be here tonight, and I'm not saying I'm 100% on my game, but I'm pretty close.
Well, and we're happy that you're feeling better. Yeah.
And I'll rely on you and Marlene to carry the ball.
Well, that's okay. Now you know we can. Just get her on.
Here she comes. Our next panelist is Lurleen Hilliard. Lurleen Hilliard is an interesting case in and of herself. She's what we call our munchkin. I call her my munchkin. And she's a leprechaun. She's from Dublin, Ireland. She calls in at 1 o'clock in the morning her time in order to be a panelist on our shows, and she appears on almost every show we do. We're delighted to have her because she has an awful lot to say and the perspective that we need from our panel. Lurleen is herself not a victim of her own child abuse, but of domestic violence. However, her four boys, who grew up in her home, obviously, are all victims of child abuse, since as Lurleen and her husband and her ex-husband had so many problems that dramatically affected them and the trauma that they experienced in their youth, she recognizes now. They range in age from about 20 down. So these are all boys who she has an interest in doing whatever she can to help them, but also help other people as she's come to understand that the issue of child abuse affects children in a lot of different ways. Her book is just out about 2 weeks ago. It's called Survivors Not Statistics. Survivors Not Statistics and Panic Child are both available on Amazon under the names Lurleen Hilliard in the one case and Carol D. Levine for Panic Child. Lurleen, as I say, is someone who calls in almost every night. She helps us in a variety of ways behind the scenes too. She's involved with our social networking outreach programs that we try to do, which all of us can help in. Lurleen has kind of got a lead role on Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter. And maybe most importantly, she helps me with this show by procuring and scheduling the special guests who appear, generally speaking, Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, at least 3 out of 6 days when we do this show 6 nights a week. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday are usually the special guest shows, and I couldn't do that pace of special guests without Lurleen helping me coordinate the effort. So let me welcome to the air Lurleen Hilliard from Dublin. Top of the morning to you, Lurleen Lash.
Top of the morning to you, Bill.
I said it that way, Carol, in case she didn't understand me.
I'm sure she'd understand you.
Yeah.
Boy, you better the more you talk, the more you cough. I swear to God.
Yeah. You have to shut up, Bill.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I know that's your goal, basically, when the two of you get on the show.
They get you to be quiet, for God's sake.
Get him to shut up.
He's got a big cough yet, though. Yeah.
But I got a couple of nice things to say. I'll report that, you know, Carolyn O'Hare, who is doing our lists for the services and groups all over the country in Canada, has been sending out a notification to each of the groups that we've listed wherever possible. If we have an email address, she has done it by email and sent them sort of a newsletter type thing that I wrote up for her. But in other cases, a lot of the groups have what comes down to like a form. You have to fill out a form. So we went back, and she had noted all those groups that had forms and she'd not been able to send an email to, and I created another kind of announcement for her, and in text format, she's been going through and telling those groups that had forms on a second pass that they are on our list, and she's more than halfway through that. She's up to the O's. I think she's in Ontario now, notifying every state and every province of Canada, every group and service that we have. Now, in doing so, she recently passed by a couple of organizations who wrote back the nicest letters. Among them, Male Survivor, actually, there was a flurry of emails back and forth yesterday that they wrote me saying this tool that we had provided was an unbelievable tool that, as far as they knew, no one had ever done anything close to what we were trying to do, and bully for us, but it was, and other groups have written back and saying this is a resource that we will be passing on as often as we can, and what a wonderful job, and so forth. People have written about the website, saying it's very clear on its layout, and it's wonderful, all the resources you offer, and so forth. So mm-hmm. the point is that she's been doing a lot of outreach through that method to mm-hmm. groups who didn't know we existed before. And since our original goal was to list every group and every service that we could find in every state in our country and in every province in Canada, this means she's really putting us on the map by doing this. So I am very, very pleased to have her as a partner in this program, and I know you guys are too. And you should be proud of what the work she's doing. It's a terrific reflection on what a grassroots, non-paid group of volunteers can do if they put their heart to it. And it's never been done by any other group, as far as we know, ever before. So.
Well, I'll tell you what, Bill. I was out today with a friend of mine who also works in the field, and she's from a different organization, and we were swapping notes back and forth, and also speaking about presentations, which are coming up very soon. Another thing, too, but the minute I walked in the door, I hadn't walked in the door more than 10, 15 minutes, and my husband told me that a gal had called earlier looking for help. And it wasn't for herself, it was for her husband. And so therefore, I called her back, and we spoke. And I went right to that map. So help me, that map is a blessing. It is a blessing. So I took her to her state, showed her how to do that, how to use it. And she's looking into the malesurvivors.org link. We had the www.malesurvivors.org link. So, without that, that map that Carolyn had and the whole program that she devised, that, it's just such a helpful tool for those of us who are trying so hard to help people. So we had a nice conversation. She has my number. I have hers and email and so forth. So I'll be helping. I'll be working with both of them. But I want, him to become involved with that group. That would be a wonderful thing. So, yes, Carol, I know you listen, Carolyn, later on. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We all get phone calls. And with what you put together, it makes our job a lot easier. Plus, people get help a lot faster.
With the male survivor as well.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, with the male survivor as well, Carol, for that man, I remember Chris Anderson, I think, isn't it? He had said that they do weekends away, which is not just for the men involved, but they can bring their partners as well. Maybe it might be a break. He could have a weekend away with his wife or if it's his partner, yet also get the help that he needs as well at the same time.
It's a wonderful, wonderful group, and I'm so thankful. We're so thankful that she did that. Go ahead.
People should go to malesurvivor.org to look up their programs. I'm not sure that they have mixed weekends, Lurleen. I do know that they have a new effort to do the same kind of weekends for women that they have not yet done yet. But I'm in touch with the gal who's doing this for Male Survivor as the women's coordinator. And she's going to come on our show at some point and describe how what they're offering is similar, but obviously different in that it's for women instead of men, but it'll be based on the male survivor seminar-style weekend experience. You go away for several days, usually to a very lovely, kind of restful environment, and you stay there. It's not cheap, but for those who can afford it, I'm sure it's wonderful. As a matter of fact, just to finish up the discussion on male survivor, this is the group that I had run off to Culver City one time last week to meet them because they'd been on our show, but I'd never met some of them face-to-face. And as a result, I met a fellow from I not only met Dr. Fradkin, who was on the board, and Chris, who's the executive director and number of other people, and the woman that I'm describing, I think her name is Milky or something. I'm mispronouncing her name. But she's the one that's going to be doing the women's group out of Ohio, I believe, actually. But I also met a fellow who lives not more than maybe 4 miles from me. He lives in two towns over, two communities of neighborhoods over. And so we made an arrangement to meet last night after the meeting, after the show, at a coffee shop. And we met halfway at one town over. We each came one town distance. And we spent 2 hours together. And this is a fellow who has been in recovery a long time. And it ended up that I told a lot of my story, and he was fascinated with how NASCA had come about, the work that we did, all the services we produced, how we were all not paid volunteers, and so, and how we were from all over, not only the country now, but you know, even the world, and that's another, you know, little bit of outreach. And he works in children's services in Los Angeles. I'm not sure in what capacity, but he's one of their top people, or it might be in Pasadena, but in one of the cities here. And anyway, you know, the fact is that Male Survivor and One in Six, which are both among the lead organizations that there are for men, have been featured on our website ever since we launched it. Because as a man, I know how difficult it is for people who are male to even come out at all. And if there's not a sense that males are even being recognized as victims, they're not going to come out. So I myself had found, you know, problems in identifying with other people in recovery who were male. And so as soon as we launched, they were on our site. And they've been there ever since. And a lot of organizations have been. They just don't know it. Well, they're getting to know it now. You know, but I also pointed out to my friend Terrence that, you know, there weren't that many differences. I've spoken about this on our show before. There are some, but frankly, if you can get through the doorway of the differences, you know, the gateway of the differences, and to the other side of it, recovery's the same. So while I appreciate that, you know, setting up is specialty programs for specialty groups, such as for men only, you know, might originally attract men, I also hope that they don't present themselves as being the be-all and end-all of recovery. Because frankly, one of the things that we need to do is we need to recognize our similarities in our needs to recognize our own humanity, and men and women share those. And the more things that we put up that make us feel different from each other, the more separateness there is, the more the walls there are. So as soon as possible, even though I understand the need perhaps to put it out to attract men to recovery, we ought to be breaking those walls down and saying, you know, I went to men's groups for years in AA, and I remember us coming to the conclusion at one of our meetings that there really hadn't been in the last year anything that we'd ever discussed that we wouldn't have been comfortable discussing with women in the room, too. Really, it was, we came to that conclusion. It was like, no, nobody could think of anything in the last year we'd ever said that we wouldn't have said, you know, in front of anybody. Because the issue's the same in the end. And the issue is, you know, becoming comfortable inside our own selves. So.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I feel like I had to explain that today. It doesn't it doesn't matter whether they're male or female, because we do feel the same. I mean, you feel the same. When you're abused, you're abused. It doesn't matter whether you're a male or female. But you see, what happens so often, though, Bill, is like if I go to if I'm going to go to a gynecologist, I'd rather go to a female gynecologist. Okay, although I've been to both, but somehow you feel more comfortable at times with things that are so personal with people of the same sex. But what people have to realize that when it comes to recovery, okay, when it comes to recovery. You can be with men or women in the same room because you all have the same problems and we all feel the same, except men, I have to say, because they are supposed to be so macho and because they are the breadwinners mostly, and because they're the ones that are supposed to guide the family, they feel embarrassed. They feel weak, maybe. They're afraid that they look weak in front of the opposite sex. And that's been a problem over the years where want to be separate. But you know what? It's not true. Go ahead.
Because you've just used the language that keeps them in that place.
Right,
they're
exactly.
Supposed to be this, and they're supposed to be that, and they're supposed to be the other. That's not true.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they've been taught. But we know that there are plenty of women who are the head of the household, frankly, or are single
mm-hmm.
mothers. Plenty of women in the workplace. They're the provider for the family. Plenty of women who are better thinkers than husbands. And there are plenty of husbands who, you know, enjoy more creative things than logistical things, you know, or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm,
so this sense of supposed to is part of the problem. What we need to recognize is that we're all mixtures of different things. And
right.
All of us have some ability to lead and some ability to follow and some ability to be a breadwinner and some ability to rely on somebody else. And we really should be sharing these things. That's the best kind of relationship anyway. So, but you're right, we're brought up that way and we're taught as little boys, incorrectly taught, that we shouldn't share our feelings as men. We should hold things in. We should be able to work anything out if we put our mind to it, if we're men. We're taught that we're men from the time we're little boys, and we're not men yet. We're little boys.
Right.
You know, we're challenged to get over stuff instead of to talk about stuff.
Right.
Whereas females are usually taught the opposite things. They're taught to be more reliant, to share information mm-hmm. with each other, especially to look for security from somebody else, and that's a problem for them too. There's a lot of women who are taught to find security from somebody else. You know, if they don't find the right partner, they're screwed.
That's right. Tell me about it.
They better understand that sometimes we all have to be self-reliant, you know.
Right,
so,
right. Well, you know, see, the things are changing, though, Bill. I mean, it's not as far ahead as I'd like it to be, but I do explain at times, like with the situation today, it doesn't matter whether you're male or female, or if you're in a room with male or females. What about when you go to AA? I use AA as an example. You know, it's you're going to have male and females. You learn, you know, you're all there for the same reason.
Exactly.
Okay.
But see, we had 3,500 meetings a week in Los Angeles when I got sober. 3,500.
Mm-hmm.
And they began to be all different kinds of specialty meetings. So you had meetings that were, of course, there are meetings that are stylized to be, say, speaker meetings or sharing meetings or step study meetings. And besides all those, though, there were meetings that were, for example, men's meetings or women's meetings or meetings for artists. What are you talking about, meetings for artists? Yeah, they had the artist recovery group, which you had to identify as an artist in order to be able to attend, I guess.
Right.
And then they had all these specialties, started to come up with all these specialties, and I was very uncomfortable with it. And I, frankly, in the end, I'm most comfortable in the most mixed group there is, you know, because it doesn't make me feel so separate, different, and unique. It makes you feel a part of the community, or the fellowship, we call it in AA, people who are in common in recovery, and we use the same program, all of us. Now, there's also something to be said for eventually, you know, designating a few people who you probably trust more than others, and you'll go to on a regular basis. So some of them might be what we call our sponsor, and again, they used to keep using the 12-step motif, but if it's not a 12-step program, it might be a counselor or a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, while you have that counselor or therapist that you can talk to privately and be very open and honest with and share everything with, you also attend the group. And at the group, perhaps you don't share every little nuance the way you do with the therapist, but you pretty much can. I mean, you really can in the end. once you're comfortable enough, and you learn to trust the group dynamic. And that's how you get,
right.
you know, and to feel sort of integrated again and not separate from, but a part of the fellowship or the community. So,
well, you know, once you get into a group, things have a way of falling into place. And you're not gonna exactly gravitate to either one. You're gonna gravitate to a person that is open to you, and that can be either male or female. Okay, and this is where people have to learn, because they too have to break down that barrier, where you know, like with a man, he feels like, well, gee, there's a lot of women here. Maybe I feel a little this way because of the way he was brought up, and it really, after a while, people realize it doesn't make a difference. Because you are there all for the same reason. That's it.
I have another angle. Well, and I have another angle to consider on this that I'll bring up. And again, it comes from my experience and my own recovery. But a lot of men who are struggling with just being a part of life on life's terms, and I'm going to use some AA terminology. We'll just continue using that because it's easiest for me. But they struggle with life on life's terms, and they come to a place where they think they're ready to recover. They balk at talking to other men because they're not used to it. Most times men are more comfortable talking to women. They'll tell you that. And a lot of times women will tell you that they're more comfortable talking to men.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a phenomenon that comes from not from the recovery process, but from the problem before the process. That women have to become more male-like in order to survive when they're not into recovery yet, and men feel feminized by the problem that they've faced. And I don't know how many women I shared that story with. A lot of women shared that story with easily.
I'm sure.
a lot of times to get their sympathy.
I know.
Because rather than the judgment that I thought would come from a man, I wanted the sympathy that I thought I'd get from a woman. And this is a phenomenon that I see, especially in early sobriety, that people will present as if they can only talk to the other sex. They can't really get, and that's part of the problem, obviously. Mm-hmm. we have to become more comfortable living with our own sex and our own sex group. So, if you need to go to in early sobriety, you need to go to an individual that's from the opposite sex, that's okay. They don't recommend it. They don't recommend it solely because people actually got killed, literally, in early AA when they were misunderstood as going to a man for advice, and their husband, for example, thought the guy was, stepping in on him, and he shot him. That happened a couple times.
Right.
And so they came up with a recommendation that you try and stick men to men and women to women if you can. A lot of people
for the first year.
It's not a rule. It's a recommendation. Yeah. It's not a rule, and a lot of people can't do it, and that's okay. But the point is we got to change who we come into the program as, and. And eventually become really a person on a different footing. And if we can do that, that's what makes us more comfortable with who we really are. We've been struggling for a long time because of our secrets and the walls that we create and so forth to have a persona that says one thing while inside we feel a completely different thing.
With myself, I can look at that. You spoke about yourself with myself. Because I was so horribly abused by so many different men, I think maybe that's why, at one time I would have, I'm far past that now, but I did actually go to female this, female that, because I feared, that I'd be, maybe I just said safer. I was in my head, safer.
Sure.
See? Okay.
Sure.
That's what happened. So, but then as you go along into your healing journey, you realize once you're starting to feel better about yourself and about people in general and about what happened, you can't feel better about it, but you can accept it better and look at it from a different perspective. I mean, abuse is always abuse, but you're getting on your healing journey, then you realize, hey, I just want someone who can help me. You know, I don't care if they're male or female, okay? The point is, you know, I need help. And so people have to work to that point. But the first thing they have to do is make the phone call, okay? That's number one.
Right.
So that's what I guide people to. And, again, I think Carolyn, I might write her a little note because I get so many emails or phone calls where people are, needing help. And I'll talk to them. I have no problem with that. But they really need group because they need friends, too. If people share, it's okay to share with one person. But if you get involved with a group, you can make friends, and that's really a good thing. Yeah. You're not alone. You don't feel so isolated anymore.
I think with the men that it's easy for them in a group because as women we talk. I mean, women in general would talk. But men hold it in a lot longer and a lot deeper. And if they have other men that are speaking out, it will give them the confidence, the self-esteem to actually realize that they're not the weak ones, that there are other men out there because they'll listen to their stories and they'll get, the confidence
and
encouragement from them.
And part of what they need to hear is that it's not a matter of weakness or strength.
Yeah.
It's a matter of an experience that's traumatized you and changed who you were supposed to be from the point that you were started to be molested, probably. And we know even our brain chemistry changed. Then our brain physiology changes. For all those kids who were molested and whose case of childhood abuse was not discovered, they become adults with brains that are traumatized, and they are completely different than the normal brain of a person who was brought up in a caregiving, comfortable and nurturing environment. Their brains are completely different, and one of the things we have to learn is that we're not weak. We're sick, maybe. We have different kinds of mental problems. We don't think clearly. We make terrible choices. We live in a state of fear and anticipation, and shame and guilt and remorse and feeling like we're going to be judged, and none of which are true. But they are our reality. They are for us true. We need to get into recovery, and a group's very helpful in doing this. To recognize that all around us there are people just like us. And they're not there to judge us. They're there to tell us that we were innocent when we were children, and the guilt that we've taken on is a fallacy in itself. That whoever was the adult in that relationship was the totally responsible person, no matter what they, imprinted on us by their demonstrations that we were somehow responsible. We weren't. We were never responsible. And we're still not today. We're responsible for our adult actions that we've taken in our adulthood, but not for the fact that we were damaged children to begin with, and that the basic foundation of our life, has been broken ever since. By the way, I see Patricia Singleton has been in the chat room since the beginning of the show. She's our guest tomorrow night. It's wonderful to have her here. She's getting prepared for us to hear the things we talk about. She's got a terrific story and message. She's been sober quite a while. She is sober, but she didn't have a problem with drinking. She had a problem with the fact she grew up in an alcoholic home, but she herself was not an alcoholic. And as a 12-step experience herself that she'll tell us tomorrow night was very, very important in her, and perhaps the most important thing, especially in her early recovery. So Patricia Singleton, thank you for being here. You can call in tonight, too. We're not going to make you just tell your story tonight. But I appreciate her being here tonight, so it's up to her if she wants to call in. However, anyone who wants to call in can on an open mic night. And it's as simple as dialing 646-595-2118. 646-595-2118. to join myself, Bill Murray, Carol Levine, and Lorene Hilliard. And so far the topic we've been talking about has really been related to recovery, but we might go off on different tangents because there are so many issues that we talk about on our show. We talk about them all, frankly, and there are so many involved with the prevention and intervention for the group of today's at-risk kids who are being abused today or could be abused today, all the way through to adult recovery for what we call adult survivors of child abuse, people who were victimized in their youth, came into adulthood with a really untreated case of childhood trauma that they never got help for. Sometimes they'll wait decades, if they're lucky, to find a method of recovery. So we talk a lot about recovery and the solution and so forth on our show. We might also touch on some of the news of the day, some stories about some of the perpetrators we've heard about, some of the statistics. And speaking of statistics, last night's guest, he wants to come back as soon as he can. He loved being on the show last night. Mm-hmm. And I told him we would love to have him back. He was a professional, we're talking about Scott Johnson, he's a professional, what they call forensic consultant. And he was, it turns out, was for us a wonderful resource and will continue to be one to get really good statistics from, in addition to stuff that we've been able to do, and then to double-check them. He pretty much, he confirmed pretty much the kind of statistics that we were using as being accurate and the right ones to use, and I didn't hear much deviation or need for us to make major changes. But I, of course, want him to tell us that. If I would have wanted him to tell us that had we been astray. Because we want to be accurate.
Well, there is a little bit of difference there. But you know what? You had said at one point, well, we could say like he wanted us, I think, really, maybe, or you said 600,000 instead of 850,000 children abused sexually each year. I think I'm just going to say horrific. And, it's thousands upon that, over 750,000, you know what I'm saying? Because, quite frankly, Bill, I haven't heard any other source.
Three quarters of a million sounds pretty big.
I know.
You know, that's 750,000. Yeah. It's hundreds and hundreds of thousands. You know, that's what it is.
Yeah.
And we always say, I know you do the same thing I do. You always say that, you know, as you use terms like as far as we know, using the best statistics available, according to the government's own figures and so forth. We don't claim these numbers as our own, and we say that child abuse is one of the worst reported of all crimes, so therefore statistics are likely to be, if anything, they're likely to be conservative. That's what the websites say, too. So.
Well, I'm just going to, word it that way also, because I'm not going to say exactly 850,000. However, you know what? We have all those, the NASCA cards, and I might say close to 850,000, put it that way. You know, because we have all those cards that I have functions coming up. I'm going to hand out what I have left and order more. And but we have to have the right stats. As far as I know, it's pretty much what we've got.
Yeah, nobody's changed that number. That's what I'm saying. Nobody has changed that number. The number that's been changed, it went from 38 million adult survivors of sexual assault in our country, to 42 million.
That's correct.
Number changed. And we reprinted them, we put 42 million because the number had gone up since we've started our organization. And you know why? Because every year another 850,000 survivors join our group.
That's right.
They become adults. And they're no longer categorized as child abuse victims. Now they're adult survivors of child abuse if they're over 18 years old. So the numbers are important. They're all shocking and statistically should be impressive to anybody who's not familiar with them. Even those who think they know about child abuse should be impressed by the numbers. The point is, we're not locked into the number. He himself said, as long as one kid, you know, is being hurt, it's one too many.
That's right. I mean, okay, I'm still going to use the 1 in 4 and the 1 in 6, okay?
Look what Patricia says in the chat room. In the 1980s, it was said that 1 out of 3 girls were sexually abused as children. 1 out of 3, that's a bigger number than 1 out of 4. And then boys weren't even counted.
That's right. that's awful. that's terrible.
So, I think we're perfectly fine to use 1 in 4 and 1 in 6.
I think so, yeah. I had 1 in 10 recently, but I'm not going to worry about that because that was only one time, and I'm just going to, until things totally change. And then the other thing with the 200,000 a day missing, because I had the a councilman had asked me about that.
2,000 a day.
I'm sorry, 2,000. What did I say, 200,000?
Yeah.
2,000. And then I broke it down from the 1,500, you know, usually between the parents and the family, whatever. And then the 500, you know, some never seen again. And then, you know, the others are pimped out on the streets, or they're trafficked here and there. I mean, it's horrible. It's horrific. These statistics are awful, okay? I can't think of a word for them. I really can't. Awful is too lightweight. But horrendous, whatever you want. You know, it's all these children that are being abused this way, whether it be physically, sexually, emotionally, neglect. You know, I mean, this is just too much. And but, again, the good news that I personally say, because I go out there so much, is that people at least are willing to listen. Now we got to get them to be proactive. And I had mentioned not too long ago, a few nights ago, one way to become proactive is if you see someone or know of someone, and we all do, most of us do, that you might suspect that they're being abused. You call that 1-800 for a child number, because they do send out the people to make that assessment in the house. You tell them what you suspect. They go and they check on it. And you know what? You can be someone's hero. And I love to use that terminology, hero, because you are a hero to that kid. You absolutely are. You know, you needed a hero. I needed a hero. My aunt, but it was a year and a half before I finally told with my uncle. That was a year and a half of horrific abuse from him. But she was still my hero because she was the one that I chose to go to, and we have to get it out there that kids are supposed to tell. Tell, you know.
Right.
I was just speaking about tell, to someone yesterday that's primarily for teenagers because I was speaking to a bunch of kids. And, you know, and you know, that's a very good organization, too. I believe in promoting organizations that, you know, deal effectively with kids or with adults. It doesn't matter because I work with both. And, you know, they were thinking, wow, that's a cool idea, you know, go around and go to functions and, you know, have T-shirts to hand out, talk to people, hand out pamphlets, information. See, all these things that we do by going out and spreading the word, handing out pamphlets at functions, this is a way of spreading the information to the people. And they'll have it in their hand, Bill. They'll look at it. They'll read it, okay, and they'll think about it. Now we need more people to become proactive. We need society to have a different mindset where, you know, where they want to help. They have to understand the problem first, so.
Right. Go ahead, Lillian.
No, I was just going to say a lot of people will only get involved after the fact, after a child has been found abused, after a child has been murdered or has gone missing. And so many people will have known that that child was suffering abuse prior to the death or the abuse being at the stage that it got to. And they just sit back and they ignore it because it's not their child. They don't want problems in the community, or they're just too bloody lazy to open their mouth and to actually make a phone call. And people have to realize that if that was your child or if that was you, you would love somebody to actually make that call or to reach out to you. It's a phone call. That's all it is one phone call.
And you can remain anonymous. Exactly. You remain anonymous. You don't even have to give your names. This is why I really stress hard because, okay, you know, maybe before, phone calls were like that, people were scared of retaliation. But there's no more excuse.
There's no excuse for it. I mean, if you know, and this is my own personal opinion, if you know a child has been abused and you ignore that and something happens to that child, in my opinion, you are as guilty as the abuser because you have allowed it to go on without making a phone call, without
That's
even
right.
trying to help.
That's
there is
right.
no point afterwards saying, well, they need to be locked up or they need to be whatever. If you know it, you are, whether it is legally mandated for you to report it as an adult and a human being, you are morally and ethically obliged, in my opinion, to report it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And you're not legally obliged, except in Florida, if you're a resident of a community alone. There are mandated reporters in every state and in every jurisdiction, but they don't include the general community, except in Florida, where it is now a felony if you knowingly withhold information about a suspicion of child abuse that turns out to be accurate child, actual child abuse. We have not seen again that these cases being tested yet, but there are a number of them in the court systems, and we'll pretty well soon enough know whether or not it's going to be held up. And if it is, and people start going to prison, because a felony carries a prison term of at least a year. And a fine, maybe that'll start making people think about it because they're obliged to do it. But I totally agree with you, Lurleen. This is a moral obligation. It's a part of being human that you would want to protect children, and that you would work towards that goal. But unfortunately, it's not a requirement. So therefore, too few people, do it early enough, and too many children are being damaged because of that.
Right.
I have an extra caller calling in, and I'm not sure who this is, but let me bring them in. They're from the 501 area code, and they did push the number one. So, hello, and welcome to the show. Who's this?
Hello, Bill. This is Patricia. I had to join in with what you're talking about.
There you go. Well, we're so glad
you're here. Hey, Patricia.
Hello, Lurleen. Just either today or yesterday on Facebook, I shared something about child abuse, and it was a horrific case of it. I can't remember exactly what it was, but because I do share so much of it for awareness purposes. But a cousin of mine, she came on there and she left a comment that this was so evil that she just couldn't share it. Well, I very gently told her that's exactly why I do share it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I told her if we ignore this kind of stuff, it will not stop.
Mm-hmm.
We have to do
right.
the awareness thing if we want to stop children from being abused.
Yep.
So.
That's
got
very true. Well,
it's really one of the most important things that could happen in the short term is us raising the awareness, getting the community to the level of being, of walking through the taboo, enough of us walking through the taboo so that we were just willing to even discuss the issue. That would be a reasonable goal, and it's all about awareness. You're absolutely right, Patricia. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think one thing, Patricia, and I know you've probably seen it as well, because we do spread so much on Facebook about child abuse. There are some people that will say that we are evil, that we are sick for posting these. I've had people say that they're going to unfriend me, that I must enjoy reading situations of abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And like you, as I say, the only way we are going to wake people up is by posting them.
Yes.
If it shocks them enough that they say it's evil, maybe, just maybe, they might open their eyes to what's going on in their own community.
Exactly.
But by not posting them, we're letting the blinkers stay on, and we're enabling the abusers to control the situation in secret. We
exactly.
have to take secrecy away. And if people don't like it, that is their issue, and they need to deal with it, but we need to keep posting.
Absolutely. Yes. You know, I've had people actually stop being my friend because and I'm just crying so hard over this. But anyway, I really don't care. But you know, the thing is, many times I go on to Facebook and Lorelina will show all kinds of things, and I answer to it, and then other people do too. You know, I mean, they show things also, and I don't care if people don't like it. Like I had someone once said to me, is that all you can talk about? Well, no, it's not, but it's what I want to talk about.
Yeah.
Okay, because the need for us to get out there is huge. I mean, we just simply have to keep pounding away at this. We have to keep, you know, putting it in people's minds so that they understand the significance of child abuse.
Exactly.
This person that I went out with today, I was so happy she had on the blue ribbon. It made me feel so good, Bill. Because she's not from our organization, but she had on the blue ribbon. And I thought, darn, there you go. And you know, if people, that's her way of saying, I respect. That's showing respect, okay? Thanks. And we need for people to understand why the blue ribbon is so important. I've posted on Facebook many times, and you know, and it comes up. I give our website, and it comes up NASCA, you know, and to explain to people that we have the yellow ribbon, we have the pink ribbon, and what they're for, just in case people don't know, right? We have the multicolored one, if you will. We have the purple one, and there is the blue one. The blue one is for child abuse. Come on, why don't we rate? People have to understand. Our ribbon is just equally, if not more, as important. Excuse me. Not that breast cancer isn't important, but or any of the others. But our children are being slaughtered.
Yeah.
One way or another.
I think as well, we had a recent guest on, and I can't remember which one it is, and we were talking about kids and people with special needs because they are targeted as well. I actually had a big argument with somebody on Facebook last night because it really annoyed me, the level of arrogance. It was actually about a woman in Ireland who went missing yesterday. Now, she was 25, but she had a lot of special needs and only had the mentality, really, of a child. Mm-hmm. And she had gone missing from 3 o'clock in the day, and this was something like 10 o'clock at night. So people were sharing it, you know, and we were saying, you know, please watch out, you know, because predators do target people with special needs, everything like that. Well, this guy came on and said, she's 27, she knows what she's doing. And she has special needs. You know, she does not know what she's doing. If she has the mental capacity of a child, she is at risk from a predator because they will target her vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
This man could not see the fact that somebody with special needs is also a risk from predators. Now, today he did, because I think a lot of people told him what they thought, but it just shows the level of arrogance. Just because somebody might look like an adult, it does not mean that they are an adult. They can still be a child inside. So a predator will target them, and, you know, it is still child abuse because they only have the mentality of a child.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sad that we forget about people that have special needs.
Well, it's not just arrogance, it's also ignorance. See,
yeah.
I think people are very ignorant in a lot of ways. That means without knowledge. And if people don't realize, you know, that when people have special needs, they're a person, they just didn't, you know, grow up past a certain point. So they might be like really like a 10-year-old or whatever. And, you know, certainly they're going to stand out, and, yes, they're going to be prey. They'll be prey.
Yep.
It doesn't matter if they're 25 or it's just like they're being abused at the age of 10, you know. So, no, that guy was just a dummy. I wasn't on late last night. Usually I am. But I would have called him a dummy. I would have gone back and forth with this guy.
Oh, I did.
I would have had fun.
I did, and I did not mean my words because, I mean, it just irritated me so much. First of all, she was missing for something like 7 hours, and he said, well, what's the problem? It's only 7 hours. 40 seconds it takes for somebody, for a child to vanish. And if you have somebody with 30
seconds, yeah.
If you have somebody with a mental or special needs and they have disabilities, they are at risk as any other child. And we all know the first couple of hours are the most important to find them. I mean, if they're not found in the first few hours, how many kids vanish and are never found?
Yeah.
And it's because people don't think it's important to post about these things or to actually even put the fact out there that there could be a predator. That is why the world is as bad as it is.
Well, that's why we work so hard, okay? You're on Facebook and Twitter, I guess, all the time or whatever, and I run the streets. I'm still running the streets. this time it's for good, though, okay? And whichever way we do it, you know, whether it be, you know, like what you're doing or what I'm doing or Bill when he goes out, whomever, you know, we're trying to get that information out there so that people can understand, you know, the significance of child abuse, you know, of learning the signs and becoming a person that is interested, becoming proactive so that our children can be safer. I had posted on, I got 42 likes just the other night on something. I forget what the heck it was. I think Mandy had posted something. And, it just behooves me that I have to ask permission to post information about child abuse and so forth when our children need to be protected. It doesn't make sense to me, Lillian. You know, but we should care enough about our children for people to learn about child abuse and the signs. Because that's what I post, you know, the signs and so forth.
If you don't have a child in your immediate family, you have family or friends that have children. Everybody knows at least one child in this world. We all, even if it's a neighbor's child. Mm-hmm. And you would hate something to happen to that child. But the people that are complaining, the people that do not want to see these posts that, as Patricia said, say it's evil or, you know, the ignorance comes through when they don't want to realize that people that are slightly different are still considered victims, they are the ones that when something happens, they hop on the bandwagon, they are screaming and shouting, they want laws changed, they want everything done, but they sit on their backsides and they do nothing until they really have to.
Right.
And they could stop it in the first place.
And some of them are abuse survivors themselves that have never worked on their own issues and they want to stay in denial. And for them to stay in denial, we have to shut up.
Well, it's too bad. They're never going to shut Carol up.
Me either.
Yeah, you ever met Carol?
sometimes Bill shuts me up. He moots me.
I have to.
That's
I have
enough
to
of that, Pink.
I have to because this is a community broadcast, Carol.
I don't care. But it's really a very serious, you know, issue. It just simply is, and it really irks me, you know, that why wouldn't people want to learn about child abuse and how to keep their children safer? I'm really mad at Walmart, okay?
Sorry, Walmart.
So fresh. No, well, I am.
Oh,
I don't care.
Go ahead.
Let them hear this. I don't care. They have the missing exploited children up there, which is wonderful that they have them. And some of them have been gone for so many years. It's so sad. Okay, and then they have, you know, those pictures of what they might look like today from when they disappeared. I asked to hang up information about child abuse and also how to become proactive and the signs so that people can understand these things. Well, it was turned down.
Wow.
It was turned down. I was so mad that, and when I get mad, watch out. So I was walking around the store and I was giving them out to people. I had a lot of stuff with me anyway. If you know what? Tonight is not going to be a waste. So I handed it out to people. I didn't care even if they worked there. I said, here, take this and read it. Why? I said, just shut up. Do it. And then I said, put this in your wallet. He said, what for? Just do it. You know, so, you know, by the time I got out of the store, they know me over there anyway. They probably think I'm wacko and I don't care. But the point is, they had the information. I got it out that night, okay? But they wouldn't let me post anything.
Yeah,
and I don't like that, you know.
I think you have to go through their corporate office probably, which is in Arkansas, where I live. I don't think too much of Walmart either, for that matter. They don't think very highly of their employees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, they don't.
You're using Walmart as an example, but I'll tell you, if it was a kind of a corporate consensus, kind of a decision in corporate America that this wasn't a priority issue, there are plenty of organizations who would benefit themselves if they would take it on. I mean, think about Target, think about McDonald's, think about Toys R Us, just on and on and on. The list is unbelievable. Walmart's one of them. But Walmart's not the only one to blame, because there's lots of opportunities for lots of organizations with long arms, a lot of outreach that could be done for a lot of good, and they themselves would benefit as being seen by, in favor of healthy children. come on. What's the big deal? The safety of our children. America. I don't know what other thing they could do, that would be more important for their own corporate persona, in the end.
But
it's
a shame. It's a shame because I've gone to churches, too. Now, you would think, well, maybe you wouldn't think about this. Now I think about it. Look at poor Bill. But a lot of churches don't want to hear what I have to say. They don't want the information, or they'll take it very curtly. They will take it curtly. I'll take this and this nutty lady will get out of here, okay? And, I don't even know what they do. Maybe they throw it in the garbage after I leave. How do I know? And,
it goes in the round receptacle.
Right. Or maybe it goes there. I don't know. But, I did find one church organization nearby, thankfully, who work with the homeless and the hungry. The hungry. And so I gave them a whole bunch of information, and they said they would, pass it out in their church, and they have a lot of people in that church. Now I'm going to check up on it and see if indeed they did do that. I would love to speak at that type of church if they allow me. But, you do the best that you can. You go wherever you can. You do whatever you can. To try and make this much more about awareness and also just how, this is something that needs to be addressed now. Yes.
Okay, and by the way, I need to make an announcement that we have now confirmed that the event for Male Abuse Awareness Week, which is the first week of December, is going to come off. Barbara Ochoa from the P. Luna Foundation was able to procure the necessary permits to do the event in Union Square in San Francisco, which is the central park in San Francisco, right outside the courthouses and the opera house and so forth. It's a very public place. On Saturday, what is it? Saturday the 7th, isn't it, Lillian? And from noon to 2, I'll be speaking. Interrupted briefly by some kind of dance troupe and a choir, but I'm the main attraction, and so I'll be there for the full 2 hours, Saturday, December 7th, Union Square, live in the daytime, and we hope it'll be a terrific turnout and an event. This is the third annual time I've participated in their Male Abuse Awareness Week, and I've spoken each time, but this is the first time that they're giving me this kind of literal platform, to talk at length about the issues of child abuse. So we're excited about it, and I just want everybody to know we'll repeat this information, obviously, several times. And we're actually going to have Barbara on the show in the week prior to, so we'll hopefully be able to attract anyone who can get to the San Francisco area on that day. It's midday for 2 hours, noon to 2 o'clock in Union Square in San Francisco. Male Abuse Awareness Week.
Well, there you go. See, that's something that's very, very, very much needed. Okay. I see Sheila's in the room there, too. Yes, please come on if you want.
I think one thing I would love, I mean, we're always going on about Walmart and all the different stores, and the amount of money that is spent every year, and a lot of it is wasted on child abuse. It's not spent in the correct ways. I would love, and maybe they do this and I'm just unaware of it, but if the likes of Walmart, all the big department stores, gave the likes of some toys or even clothes that had slight seconds, even to the schools, so that if there's a kid that goes there that doesn't have something, that doesn't have a backpack, that doesn't have a jumper or doesn't have a jacket, that they don't have to be singled out because they don't have it, that the store has an arrangement with the schools where they can give a little bit back, it wouldn't cost them much. But at least they'd be helping those children if they don't have food at home or they don't have clothes to not actually be living in abuse.
Walmart has, my son and daughter-in-law both work at two different Walmarts in our town, and my daughter-in-law was just telling me recently that they have an angel tree for the employees, and she drew somebody's name off of her tree, and my son across town drew one off of his. So they do have something like what you're talking about.
That's good. I didn't know.
I'm going to have to go in and check and see if we have one in mind, because
well, this is only open to the employees, is what she told me. So I don't know.
Actually,
I thought they had them done for the public as well, but according to her, not this year, or not in my town. Let me put it that way.
I'll have to check and see.
So.
I actually saw a news story about this, and they took a different angle on it. It was one of the Walmarts had put out a note, the administration had put out a note asking for fellow employees to make contributions so that other employees, other associates, I think they said, could have a better holiday season. And the point of the story that I saw was, you know, what they're really telling the other employees is they don't pay enough for their associates to have a good season. And they're trying to get, and they meant it as a good thing, but it kind of backfired when somebody posted this and said, you know, why should these people who work for Walmart need, you know, be in need if Walmart is supposed to be the biggest employer in the country? How could they have employees that can't enjoy the holiday season without being supported by fellow employees?
Right.
I mean, it's kind of backfired on.
Right.
Well, they make so much money from children. I mean, everybody who goes to a Walmart, if they have a child with them, at some stage, you know, I mean, if it's not candy, it's toys, you always end up buying something that you didn't expect to. They make a fortune, all of the stores do, of children. And they could give a tiny thing back. They could even have where people just put anonymous gifts for boys or girls, whatever, in a big box, and they're given to the schools. Rather than just to people that come to the store looking for them, give them to the schools or give them to people that they know will actually make sure those kids can have a Christmas. They can have clothes. They can have food without feeling humiliated or embarrassed.
One thing we do over at my mall, which, oh, my God, the malls, I don't know what your malls are like, but a lot of the stores have closed down. It's really quite sad, and then others pop up. But not nearly as many. But one thing, we'll see if they have it this year when it gets closer to Christmas. They do have a great big bin, at least they have in the past years, okay, where people could give gifts wrapped, okay, some of them. Well, they didn't really prefer it actually to have unwrapped because you don't know what's in a box when it's wrapped. I think they're kind of scared, all right? So some of them were wrapped and some of them weren't wrapped. But it's for kids that you know, like in the orphanages or so forth, or just families in general in town, like the kids that come from poor families, so that they'd have a gift. Now, that's very nice, and Santa was sitting next to it. So they were being guarded, the things that were being put in there, so people couldn't just walk by and grab something. You know, people can, you know, do stuff like that. Now, that's one way of giving, but there's so many ways of giving. And if all the stores would just, you know, do that. Now, in ShopRite, they have a great big pig. They do. And you put money in that pig, and that goes, you know, at Thanksgiving time or for Christmas time or whatever. And then, of course, they allow for the Salvation Army to be out there. And, yes, they do allow for me to put NASCA information on the bulletin boards where people can read it. They take it down. I put it back up. because I think the perverts are doing that. There's a whole bunch of them around there. So it's like a little battle that's going on. But the point is, you know, if more people, if every store, they make so much money. Come on. If they would, you know, the bigger stores, if they would do that, there'd be a lot of happier kids.
Yeah.
You know, they'd have something to open at Christmas time.
That's it. Just some things to have. Because kids lose their innocence, especially kids who have been abused or have lived in a home that's abusive. They don't know what it's like to have Santa Claus or to have fun, to laugh, to be a kid. Mm-hmm. So a little gift from a department store that would cost them nothing would mm-hmm. make the difference between a child actually waking up and crying maybe on Christmas Day and thinking
sure.
nobody cared to actually waking up with a smile on their face.
And you know what's so sad too, Lillian? Teachers don't think. They don't think.
No.
Because there's a lot of kids that, especially with everything that's going on in our country now, I don't want to get into politics, but, you know, there's a lot. They can't afford as much as they used to, okay? And some can't afford anything. So then you go back to school and they want to know, what'd you get for Christmas?
Mm. Yeah.
You know, and that makes kids feel, yeah. That makes kids feel really rotten. Mm-mm-mm. They should not do that. They shouldn't be allowed to do that. And,
no, peer pressure.
And then, no, and even the kids that where their families are on welfare, they are allowed to go and pick certain toys, I guess, from certain areas of the welfare department. They're allowed to do that. They have designated areas. But then you have those families. Let's just say mommy and daddy both work at Walmart. Oh, my God. But let's just say, okay, they don't get paid much. They don't get paid much. And they can't
no.
afford to have a huge Christmas, all right?
No.
And, no, they can't. So, you know, there's so many kids who can benefit by, you know, this type of giving. And that's what Christmas is about. It's giving, mm-hmm. all right? And especially for the children.
It's about kids.
Yeah.
And it's the one time a year when I think everybody, no matter what business they're in, they can do something tiny. Maybe
mm-hmm.
not spend that extra dollar on the Christmas party. Or, you know, not buy the bottle of wine that's as expensive, say 50 cents or a dollar, and do something for a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Christmas is for kids. And they
mm-hmm.
only have a short time when they're allowed to be kids. And we should all try and help them.
That's right. That's right. And it's the same thing, you know, like at the end of the summer when you go back to school. What do you do for your vacation? See, schools have to learn not to put kids in those positions, especially
yeah.
now with the way our country is. Because
well, it just encourages bullying.
Hey, I think that was the beginning of my writing career. I used to get, wow, the stories I came out with when I go back to school. Oh, my God.
I was
the here,
quiet
went
kid.
There. What's that?
I was a quiet kid, and I got even quieter when they asked what'd you do for summer vacation or what'd you get for Christmas, because I came from a poor family.
Mm-hmm.
We did good to get one thing for Christmas,
mm-hmm.
and we didn't go anywhere all summer
mm-hmm.
long,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So because we didn't have the money to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, people, you know, the schools have to be informed about certain things. If only they could help in more ways, like, you know, having special people to go to if you are being abused at home, hello. You know, and even in cases just like this. Because kids have memories and their minds are like sponges and they remember all these things, you know. And finally I was able to go to a cabin that belonged to a grandmother of mine, which is in my book. And, oh, my God, I had so much fun. I was so thankful to be able to go there. But before that, you know, I would make up wild stories. You know, because, hey, somebody else was doing this and someone else was doing that, so, well, I guess I can do this, you know. You know, that type of thing. But it's almost Christmas. The holidays are around around the corner. And there's going to be a lot of sad kids. You bet.
There's a lot of sad adults, too. I want to make a point. I mean, we're talking about the poor kids and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very, very difficult time for anyone who suffers from any kind of stress or mental problem and certainly this would include adult survivors of child abuse. It's really tough to go back to the family from which you feel so estranged a lot of times and expect to be a good participant at Thanksgiving dinner. or at Christmas Day. It's really, really tough. And we need to recognize this, too, and not to have too big of an expectation for ourselves. You know, it might be that we're better off not going back, or it might be better if we're better off going back in a kind of a measured way where we'll show up but not throw ourselves completely into the fire, you know, jump out of the fire. What is it called? Out of the one thing and into the fire.
Frying pan into the fire or whatever.
Frying pan into the fire.
Or
even better, if we go back determined the way I do it, and I'd always done it, to be of service however I could, because that puts me on a different footing, and I lose the expectation of them doing something for me. I lose that, and that is part of my program, obviously, to be of service. And that works for family situations, too. If you go back and you keep busy with making sure everyone else is okay, there'll be other people there. Believe me, it's easy to find other family members who are maybe a little down or need a little help or just need assistance doing the chores of putting together a Thanksgiving dinner or a Christmas day. But I just want to recognize that adults, too, have a lot of trouble facing and walking through in a graceful way the holiday season.
Sheila wants to ask something.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Here she is.
I told her.
Can you hear me now?
She just called in. Hi, Sheila. Yeah, hi.
Hi. Can you guys hear me?
Hi.
We can hear you.
No,
all
we
right.
can't hear you.
Hey, Sheila.
Oh, okay.
Hi, Sheila.
This is Sheila from Southern Ohio.
Hey,
coming
Sheila.
At you from Appalachia, Ohio.
Hey, Ohio. How you doing?
I can relate. I want to tell you real quick. I come from a small family, and I don't talk to any because when I confronted the abuser, which was my mother and stepfather, they just kind of cast me aside, and my sisters took sides. So it gets sad, and I have two children. My daughter is a nurse at the Cleveland Clinic, and she's estranged from me because she took dad's side in the divorce. And my son is a software engineer traveling. He lives in Seattle. So it's pretty much me and my little Maggie Mae and my little Beta Fish. So it gets sad, but I guess you get used to it. And this is all new to me. I'm 52, and I'm really trying to deal with all of the abuse and get better. And I wanted your opinion about me. The Recovery Council is what gave me your link, the Recovery Council in my town, and they only cater to chemical abuse, but I thought, couldn't I ask them about getting a support group? Because there's got to be plenty of people in my case that maybe I don't abuse any alcohol or anything, but I sure could use, besides anxiety support, it'd be nice to have a group, and I just don't know what to do about it.
All right. Well, we'll work with you off air. We have lots of ideas. And I just sent you an email because you had offered to type up a version of your experience about how to log into Blog Talk and how to find our show, two steps.
I will.
You had just done it, and it's fresh to your mind. I would love to have those instructions to give out to people because I get that question all the time. But I wanted you to know, Sheila, that first of all, we're here all the time. We're here six nights a week on this radio show, but we also have about 25 of us that have our phone numbers on our website at NASCA.org, NAASCA, you probably know this, NASCA.org,
right.
That's our website. And under the contact button, there's about 25 of us. Carol's there, and I'm there too. And you can call us anytime you want when you feel a need to ask a question, to get some direction, to share something with someone. You don't have to feel alone. I will tell you that in my early recovery, it was very difficult for me to be around my family. So what I did was, rather than go home for Thanksgiving, and this was a little bit hard, but rather than go home for Thanksgiving, I went to, for a few years, I went to homeless shelters, and I served Thanksgiving dinner instead. That's what I did. And it gave me a sense of being a part of a group and helping people who were even less fortunate than me. And I walked away, you know, and I had a Thanksgiving dinner myself, and I walked away feeling better probably than I would have in my early recovery anyway, of, you know, as I say, jumping out of the frying pan and going into the fire would have been. Now, that may be tough for someone in a small rural setting where everybody knows everybody. I get that. But there'll be other things that we can share with you. I included my phone number in the email and, of course, my email address that I just sent you. And you should call me, and I'll direct you to how to find some meetings. If not in Ohio, you live near the corner of, if I'm thinking about it right, near Kentucky and Ohio maybe, and maybe West Virginia. Somewhere in there?
Well, I live, if you know where Columbus is and the main artery is State Route 23, I live 1.5 hours south of Columbus and about 40 minutes north of Kentucky.
Yeah, exactly. What's the nearest biggest town?
The biggest town would be Chillicothe, which is one county north of me, and the little town I live in is called Waverly, and it's in Pike County. And then the biggest town south would be Portsmouth. Right on the Ohio River is Portsmouth. But I think there might be some kind of group in Jackson, but I don't know.
Well, we'll figure this out later, but you can also start a group, and that's another option for you. There may
that's
be other people in
thinking.
Your community. And we have several different ideas about already existing organizations that want more of their groups, and I'll tell you about them. I don't want to spend the time on the air necessarily.
Good. Okay, that's great.
This is a service we do for anybody who has a question like the one you just asked, and we'll be delighted to spend time with you as often as you want.
Well, you've given me some courage, and I've really gotten some courage from that one thing that I get. I believe I got it from your website where it said some thoughts when it starts with, you know, we are innocent and guilt-free, yet we share feelings of shame and fear, and it goes on and on. And that just made me realize you are sane and you're going to be okay and you're going to be bigger than this. But I have a friend that is 30-year sober alcoholic, and he said if you could start a group specifically with that, well, kind of like 12 steps, see what you can do. So I have not been brave enough to do that till now. So I will definitely email and get information, and we'll go from there.
Yeah,
that
no, we
would be
have,
wonderful
um,
if you did that.
We have several. We have three, at least three ideas for you to start groups, and it'll depend on, you know, which style of meeting you want to have. But all three organizations would love to have you start an additional group using their process. And they don't care which one you choose. We don't care which one you choose. So.
Okay, that's great.
All right,
we'll be in touch about it, and I will touch base with you by the email.
Yeah, don't call anywhere now. Don't call anywhere. You're on the air with us. You stay. You have to stay.
No pressure here, boy. Oh my God. You're gonna scare the poor girl. What are you doing?
No, I'm not. I am not. She liked what I wrote on the website.
Oh, okay.
Well, I got to tell you, another person that really, really encouraged me to realize that life goes on, because sometimes I'm thinking, oh, I'm 52, I'm half a century old, this ain't nothing, nothing's going to happen and any good. And I thought, now, they had a little segment with Muriel Hemingway. You know, her grandfather was that very famous Ernest Hemingway.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
in their lineage, I think it was on 60 Minutes or something. In their lineage, there is 6 or 7 people that committed suicide also. And Muriel,
right.
I believe she's close to my age, she was very encouraging because she said when she was ready and dealt with it, she never looked at it as, oh, you know, this is a curse, and is this suicide thing going to come to me? She said once she dealt with some personal demons that she had, she said, oh, it's like I'm a kid again. You know, she's jumping on the trampoline, and, you know, she just feels like she's starting a second childhood. Mm-hmm. And that's almost kind of like, you know, when you release all that pain, especially when you get all that out. I know that people have had worse abuse, but from what I've read, but you just there, you can start again. And 52 is an old 50 is fabulous. You know, you can go on, but the anxiety is still there. So I think a group would probably help me.
Yeah,
I think you're great.
That. No
right
but
now, Sheila,
yeah.
You know what? You have a great mindset to be the leader of a group. I can hear it in your voice. And you can start at 52. As long as you have breath in your body, you can start anytime, okay? So don't feel like, wow, 52 is like a big number or anything. I'm glad that you're at the point where, you know, you want to heal and you want to get involved with groups and you want to start groups. And groups is something that are very, very much needed. Oh, my God. There's so many survivors walking around out there.
Was that Patricia trying to get in? What's her shot? Go ahead.
Go ahead.
That's okay. That's okay.
I just wanted to say that
Sheila, the best thing that you can do is learn to love yourself.
Right.
That is when the real healing starts, because it changes your whole attitude toward you and your life. And I was sitting here trying to look for my resource list where with the particular book that I used, and I'm sure there are others out there now than there were when I started my healing back in the 1990s. But that's the best thing. That's the first thing you really need to do is start working on learning to love yourself.
You're right. And, you know, I have on my wish list from Amazon, I think a lot of people have wish lists, it's a book, and I think it was written in the 80s, but it's about healing the inner child. And what I learned from counseling, the very first severe abuse happened, I always say it was at the tender age, I was just 14 years old, and there is an inner child that still... She's not hurting as much, but she's still it. There's still that child that needs to heal for me to, I guess, fully love myself. And I used to have just terrible body image. I always thought I was an oddball because I'm the only redhead in the family, and I was always the chubby one and all this other stuff. And just a lot of stuff. But, hey, I'm 52. I'm here. I'm hanging in there. I'm doing the best I can one day at a time with all kind of health problems. But this cloud, Pooh Bear was my favorite as a kid, and I feel like I still have that little black cloud over my head saying, you know, you think you can heal on your own, we got to reach out and get others involved because there's a lot of people out there.
Mine was Linus. You remember Linus, the guy from Charlie Brown who had the dust cloud around him wherever he went? That was me.
Brother.
We only have 3 minutes less than 3 minutes left in the show, ladies. So what I'm going to ask us to do is I'm going to ask Sheila to come back tomorrow, okay? Because Patricia Singleton is on the show tonight and got a couple of words in edgewise. We're going to give her the microphone for the main time tomorrow night. She is our special guest tomorrow night, Patricia Singleton from Arkansas, and she's going to describe to us. And I've had several recent, and it's kind of interesting, so almost serendipity, people who have expressed a desire for a 12-step program that fit the model for our needs. And as Patricia knows, I shared something with her that could fit that bill. Well, we'll talk about that tomorrow night a little bit too. But the focus tomorrow night is going to be Patricia and her experience, which has a 12-step aspect to it. And you're going to be fascinated by the fact that she and I both used a 12-step program, not necessarily designed for our issue, for the issue we ended up dealing with, which was, you know, recovery from the trauma of our youth specifically. But we were able to use the program. So, Patricia Singleton, you'll be our guest tomorrow night. We're going to find out a lot about you. Woo-hoo! I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I hope that I'm up to your standards.
Oh, you're going to do great. Are you kidding me?
I haven't told my story on the radio in a while, and I told all of it. So
you don't have to worry. I help you tell your story, and you're going to do great. I know you will. So come back tomorrow night and hear Patricia. In the meantime, you and I might exchange a couple of emails and phone calls tomorrow. Well, Sheila.
Wonderful. That's great.
I'd be happy to do that. I only have 60 seconds left on the show, and last night they cut me off at the moment of 60 seconds was gone. So I'm afraid that could be a new policy. And because of that, I'm just going to say goodnight for everybody's sake. Thanks, Carol and Marlene, as our regular panelists, but also Patricia Singleton, who's going to be our special guest tomorrow night, and Sheila for calling in out of the chat room. Chat room's really important to us. We always run a chat room with our shows because regardless of whether people want to come on the air, that's a way they can share with us and we can learn about them. And it's a way of engaging the public, even if the public is afraid to call. Of course, it's not a big deal to call. It's just a, it's just a perception. But this is Bill for the rest of the gang saying thank you for listening. May God bless you. God bless the children of the world. And God bless adult survivors of child abuse.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business?
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.